Gut. Ist der Ton schon da?
Alles da.
Okay. Also, then we start today a sort of sequel of yesterday, where we were talking about the present world situation in context with the war in Russia. And I mentioned Putin in connection with his stay in Germany. And I mentioned a parallel to the German World War situation in 1914, where we had the leading general Moltke. Moltke did not want war, but he had to maintain the existence of Germany in a sandwich situation between East and West. And the same, we said, in a way, is the case with Putin, surrounded and threatened by the approaching NATO, who had, and I repeat that, the definite aim when it was founded, the definite task to keep the Soviet Union out, the Americans in, and the Germans down. Now, I want to elaborate a little bit about the German-Russian situation. And it's very, maybe, extraordinary for some of our listeners, the perspective that I want to unfold today. We have Russia today. By the way, this is a TV channel that is now closed down in all the European countries. I think Switzerland is also coming. So we are forbidden to see what's going on in Russia. And the parallel figure to Putin in the First World War was Helmut von Moltke. And now Moltke is deeply connected with the Russian sphere in that time of his acting, 1914, etc. Now we have an extraordinary perspective connected with Moltke, and this has to do with Steiner. Now this is a publication we made many years ago in England, second edition only. And I can add, it is the most important publication that Perseus, our company, and the translation was coming out in Rudolf Steiner Press, has ever been able to put out. Why? And this has to do precisely with Russia and Russia today. And beside all the gloomy perspectives we have now all over the world, starting with this war, touching on the energy question, dragging Middle European people into an abyss of scarcity, of maybe even worse things like civil wars, NATO war. I want to point out a very bright perspective which is connected with Moltke. And as every individual, Moltke had not only an earthly life, but he had a life after death. And in this life after death, many things unfolded which are of actual importance today. What things? First, I must say, he had a destiny of being in the front of the German army, and he didn't want to take over this job of being the general chief of the general staff of the German army. But the Kaiser was wanting him, and he actually told him that he didn't want to. And then he put some conditions to the Kaiser, namely that he keeps out of affairs in a war situation, because he'd like to meddle himself into things all the time. And so he put conditions which never was the case before to the Kaiser. And the Kaiser accepted. And then events unfolded, and soon after the war started, there was the first battle lost, the Marne battle, and Moltke was sacked. After he had been sacked, I just want to briefly touch on this, he had the leisure of in freedom to ponder about matters that he knew about, but he didn't have to ponder about it. He didn't have time. And this has to do with his association with Steiner. As a general, he never attended lectures because he had his duty, and he thought he could not mix this with his spiritual interests. But when he was free from his duties, he started pursuing his spiritual interests. And his spiritual interests were fueled by remarks of Steiner's in 1915 that started, that he was told, study the history of Pope Nicolaus in the 9th century. There is a German famous historian who wrote about Pope Nicolaus in the 9th century. And he was a decisive pope who had, in a way, to free the European sphere from the Asiatic spiritual life of that time. Push it back. Why? In order to make the Europeans able to turn their interest to the earthly matters, not have visionary life playing into it. So he laid the crown, this pope, in the 9th century for what had to develop as materialism and interest in the sense world for the Europeans. This was a historic necessity. And so this Pope, Nicolaus, laid the ground for what later became the separation of the churches. Roman Catholicism, Orthodox spirituality went separate ways. And at a specific date we can name and say that was the date in which the churches separated. That was 1054, the date of the schisma. And Pope Nicolaus had prepared for this while he was still living, of course. Now, what was revealed to Moltke in his last time on earth was precisely his inner connection with this Pope who separated East and West, which separation was first a spiritual one, I will explain shortly, and then a church one, and at the end a political one, the West-East political separation. He was at the origin of that. But he was at the same time still a man who was confirmed of the spiritual realities. He had inspirations in the 9th century, like he felt inspired by Saint Peter, the apostle, and followed his way. And he thought it was in his intention to bring about the separation of East and West, which had at its basis the separation between the world of the spirit and the sense world. And Nicolaus didn't want to abolish the spirit, as was done a little bit after his lifetime in the Council of Constantinople, where the spirit was dogmatically abolished. No, he didn't want that. He wanted that people for, say, 1,000 years had a believing relation in Europe to the spirit. They didn't deny it, but they had to have their gaze free for the sense world, for developing materialism, science, technology, which all came. So he had a world historic mission for a certain time. But as we know from spiritual science, there are always beings who want to go beyond a certain frame of a historical necessity. And instead of wailing the spiritual world for a certain epoch, 1,000 years, they wanted to do away with it forever. These are the Ahrimanic beings. So this was not what Nicolaus wanted, but what Ahriman wanted, playing into it. Now, Moltke started to become acquainted with these historical perspectives. And now, after his death, he was in the situation of being followed, in a good sense, by the spiritual gaze of Steiner. What was the result? Steiner wrote down weekly, monthly, hundreds of messages from this departed soul, covering personal experiences in the light of world historic experiences. After death, he sees his destiny going back to the 9th century, where he had to push back the Eastern spirituality, which prepared him for becoming the man who was confronted with the East, with Russia in a wartime. And there is a beautiful scene already in Moltke's life, in which he was sent to St. Petersburg with a letter by the Kaiser for the Tsar, and a symbolic picture showing the peoples of Europe, keep you most holy goods vis-a-vis the Far East danger of what was termed Buddhism at that time, And he handed over this sketch to the Tsar. And when he went back, one of his gloves fell down on the floor. And he wrote often many vivid things to his wife. He said, "What a strange scene. May I hope it not turn into an omen," because that was like a symbolic gesture of conflict. And indeed, the conflict that he laid the ground on in the 9th century came up again in a time where nobody thought of war, not the Kaiser, not the Tsar, but about 20 years later, Europe was in war. Now, after his death, he sees these scenes again in the light of the events that have been foregoing it in the 9th century. And many, many, many experiences are written down by Steiner, experiences post-mortem, and the widow of Moltke, Eliza, was reading them, was connecting with it. And there are many, many layers. You could say he speaks about Ahriman, he speaks about Michael, he speaks about demons, he speaks about the war situation that was not judged truly in Germany. Yesterday I mentioned the book by the British authors, Jim McGregor and Gary Doherty, Hidden History, which is the first book which puts into right true perspectives what happened in 1914 or the years before, namely the preparation for this war in the British, later American, British elite. And Germany was for a whole century blamed as the alone origin of the First World War, which is in the light of this book simply uneducated nonsense, so to speak. Now, the soul of Moltke already, after death, sees these things in the right light. And what I want to briefly, I mean, it's a huge cosmos, these revelations of Moltke after death. I cannot go into too many things, but I want to draw out now one layer. And I must add, maybe, that's why I claimed this is the most important book that we ever published. It is extraordinary. No document of a similar character exists, so to speak, that documents both the earthly life of an important individual and then the after-earthly life of the same individual, and showing the relation between these two spheres. That's unique. That doesn't exist a second time. And I think it is very good to look into it, because we can learn to have a much more complete understanding of a human life than we usually have, because we can see its connection with the spiritual world, with a previous earthly life. In our case, Moltke's previous earthly life was precisely this Roman Pope, which was maybe the last Pope who had spiritual inspirations and had to undertake a huge world historic task about East and West. And then in the 20th century, as I said, he came into this West-East conflict, which in a way he had to originate in the 9th century himself. And now,
eine kurze
please.
you make very little eye contact. You're always searching. Are you like?
I make very little what?
You are avoiding eye contact.
Oh.
With the, neither with the cameras nor with me.
Oh my dear, that's very bad. Yes, I try to concentrate on what I have to say. That's the reason. But okay, I can.
You make a lot of beautiful points, and then you know.
I come. I warm up. It's a bit chilly here.
Okay. But you know, always feel free to look at me if you want to look at a human, because I'm close enough to the cameras.
Right.
So
okay.
Any camera will do. They're all
fine.
Beautiful.
Fine. Thank you. Yeah.
I like the story so far.
Yes, but I was too much. Yeah. Now comes the point, which links with the present situation, because after a certain while in the unfolding of the spiritual life of Helmut von Moltke's individuality after his death, we find his spiritual gaze turning not to the past, like the 9th century or like the First World War, about which, by the way, he says extraordinary things. He says, for example, it is good that the Germans did not win the First World War. On Earth, he had a different opinion on that. Up there, he says, why not? Because there were not enough people in Germany to make use of this victory in a meaningful way. That's an interesting contrast point, and there are many. But after a while, as I said, his gaze turns to the end of the century. And in this book, you find about 20 passages in which he talks in quite a definite manner. No doubt, no maybe, no possibly, but we will come back. We means himself, his courageous woman, wife, Eliza, some of his children, to perform another task, which is in a way the consequence of the task in the 9th century, which led to the conflict situation in the First World War. He speaks about his task, and I will give you a few passages concretely. So we have here a prophetic look into the future by someone of great world historic importance, and said this look is closed in quite concrete words. And they are describing a task in such a way that everyone who looks into that can also have some positive elements for dealing with the present very dark time. That's why we call the whole book Light for the New Millennium. Now, a few chapters or a few passages about this prophecy here, which touches the end of the century and actually the beginning of this century. So if anyone takes that seriously, he can know, oh, there are not only human beings on Earth now, coming from their own stream of development, there are also people who have been on Earth shortly before with a great historical task and many experiences, and they will follow. Now, this task that is being talked about in these documents, in these unique documents, are touching the Eastern sphere, Russian sphere, the sphere which was the sphere which caused conflicts. And now there is a new task, and I will give you a few passages, as I said. One is, in the East, that was said spiritually in February 1918. In the East, there is now chaos. The previous incarnation in the 9th century, we have talked about this, Nicolaus, cut me off from the East, but I do nevertheless have a task to fulfill there, a future task. That was a repetition in another form of what happened in the 9th century. At that time, I contributed to cutting off the East from Europe. Now I had to go to the West, now means in the First World War, in order to build up a relationship with the separated West. In the East, my task in the future can only be a spiritual one. In the context of the present spiritual constellation, it seems good to me now that I was scarcely drawn into an active role in the battles in the East. This enables me to make spiritual connections with many Eastern souls. The chaos there will only gradually take on the forms that it must eventually come to. My view of the tasks that come to me from the East is unobstructed to the extent that I have worked directly in the West and only indirectly in the East. Thus, what was puzzling down there is now clear. The East is awaiting a task for which I must prepare myself by the next century. Earthly institutions must then be founded, which will be an image of spiritual ones. She, that's his wife, his former wife, and others who are linked with us are to work together on this. So he speaks here for a first time of the coming spiritual task in the East, which is spiritual, not political. Nobody should expect, as some people do, who know these things by now, speculate, oh, this was Gorbachev, oh, this was even demonized Putin. And it's not the case, you can be sure. Now, a very concrete characteristic of this new task at the end of the century, he speaks like in the indicative, you know, grammatically, absolutely definite certainty, not wavering, not hoping, not this and that. And this is extraordinarily, I think, telling. He says, a bit later in 1918, the events of the 9th century are now passing in their own peculiar way into the sphere of existence in which they express their effects on the earth as if in reverse. In the 9th century, we pushed back to the East what was of no use for the West and Central Europe, but it continued to live in the East. Since then, it has lived in the souls of the people of the East, but now it is disengaging from the people and is becoming like an auric cloud rolling from East to West. We can say in this auric cloud is involved the spiritual side of what has become Bolshevism in the East. Because Bolshevism has a spiritual side as well, of a very materialistic character, of course. but it has a spiritual side. What is thus rolling like an auric cloud across Europe from the east during the course of the 20th century will take shape at the end of the century in such a way that it will be our task to take hold of it. Humanity is being prepared more and more for the realization that one cannot be happy with what is to be found solely on the physical plane, though everyone is seeking for it there. People will have to cease looking for this happiness and will have to realize that what comes from the spiritual world must flow into everything that the human being experiences on the earth. It is only the combination of earthly and spiritual experience which will produce what is desirable for humanity. But this cannot be made clear to the human being of today, he says, looking downwards. And our task will be concerned with acquiring the forces by means of which the interrelationship of spirit and body can be made clear in social and political life as well. It will be the opposite task from the one we had in the 9th century. In the 9th century, separate spirit from body for your consciousness, not in reality, for your consciousness. Now bring it together. Everything today in the new task has to be looked in a combined way, physical, spiritual. Even the money question that we will talk about later. Even the money question, the political question. So, you see a sketch of a task which is the reverse of the 9th century and which would lay the ground not only for this spiritual union of spirit and body again, but for the corresponding geographical political reality. That would be an outcome. And the tragedy or the incompleteness of 1989, we have touched about briefly yesterday, was that there was no spiritualization. The materialism of the West was just exported into the East. And there is one passage in this document in which the individuality says one should never work only with economic thoughts into the East without the spiritual equivalent. So you see a clear lining out the message of the future of this individuality combined with a few others in the Eastern sphere, I would say, right now in the present time. And I think it's good to know that we have people with great tasks of a world historic character that are present in this chaotic wartime covering also the Eastern sphere. There are a few other things I would like to add for closing. Sayings, there are many things just interesting as statements. Another one, prophecy, is we must live towards the future at the end of the century. We will then incarnate as people who will find the strength in their physical lives to work together with the gods. Isn't this an encouraging statement that someone can speak like that? Definite. However the situation will be, there will be people who have a kind of a new spirituality working right down into the physical world. That's what we need. because that's what we don't have in the present global political or economic leadership at all. And then we say, we find statements like that. Everybody wants to live on the wreckage of the 19th century. The 20th century demands a quite different attitude, but people do not want to submit to such a requirements. There are many individuals incarnated now who have no soul. They become bearers of demonic powers. How is it today? These can only be recognized when people have knowledge of the spiritual, and they do not want such knowledge. He sees from up there. The resistance against spiritual knowledge, and especially against such realities as reincarnation and karma, have come to the culmination today in the age of Ahriman. Ahriman doesn't like that. Ahriman doesn't like that people turn their gaze to spiritual signs and to reincarnation of karma. And I think from that point of view, this is a terrible publication that we have done. Terrible. And you can see it in such a way, it has been a fringe publication. Not many people catch up. And he says, goes on, if spiritual knowledge does not spread, a time will come when black Ahrimanic birds hovering over the heads of people will form a barricade between human beings and the spiritual world. These black birds of ill omen want to cut off the light of the Michael spirit from mankind. It's also a prophecy that is being largely fulfilled in our present time. And that shows the difficulties, the objective difficulties, that people get a larger, but a clear, not a visionary, spiritual consciousness by working in these things, by trying to understand uncommon things, complicated things, and not just have the wish to being given from high up, or what they think from high up, from the spiritual world. Now, these are just a few samples about someone who is, I would say, among us spiritually. And I think it's of a certain importance right now in this turmoil, seemingly caused by Russia. I say seemingly because it's very clear how many forces were working in such a way that this conflict seemed to be unavoidable. There I see a parallel, as I said yesterday, between the situation in Russia and the situation in the First World War. Not making any speculation about a karmic connection, of course not, I don't think so. But I sometimes feel the Russian sphere is a battleground by people in the Western elite who know exactly that this sphere will have a great future, also of new spiritual faculties coming, and they want to lay the hand on this future by influencing its present development. That's why one goes into Russia, not only out of economic, egotistical interest, this is certainly also the case, but to be sure that they are keeping the future in their hand. That's the elites, globalist elites' interest. the deeper interest carried by people or by individualities, like the former Moltke, like Steiner, is to pave the way for a peaceful development of the future Slavic peoples. And in order to do this, Middle European, especially what was Germany, should help them to find this way. They need the support of Middle European. The Western elite says, no, we don't want that. And I quoted yesterday the sentence of George Friedem, who said, it was the primordial intention of the American foreign policy in the last 100 years, about the time we speak about here, to prevent a coming together and a going together of Germany and Russia. Why? Because if they go together, they could develop a strength that surmounts our global power situation. We are not number one, so we don't want that. So this is a huge constellation in which we have, and that's why I wanted to bring this intermezzo in it. We have some very bright lights, very silent, you could say. You don't hear anything of that. You might not see anything of that, but we could be sure. But there are strong, decided, positive intentions which go far beyond all this destructive, egotistical politics, economics, the world economy, which will we speak about in the next section, is ruled by ruthless globalists' interests of very few people. And that is not the true ideal of a future world economy. And in this struggle towards the light, that's why we call this light for the new millennium, we have certain individuals who had a world historic task, who have now the reversal of the task they had to bring things together again. Because the purpose of the separation of spirit and matter, of East and West, has been absolutely fulfilled. Materialism, technology, science is there. So it is not necessary to go on with this separation as the Western elites want. That's a huge conflict behind the background of our time. And so that's why I wanted in this followed intermezzo to yesterday's to point at a very bright time and a publication that is now, it was also done in Hungarian, and we will hopefully have a Russian edition, because I think in Russia there will be many people who are ready for such a large grasp and large perspective to seeing our present time events. So that was the hope, to brighten up the dark sky a bit, because this is also a reality we should not forget. And I think those people who are a bit too often watching the news and being informed about all this terrible thing sometimes tend to forget that there are also forces and individuals who see far beyond the catastrophe that we still might meet in the near future. Or to close with a statement by my beloved Dean Dunlop about whom I have spent many years to write a biography, he once said, "We have seen many catastrophes in world history," say the Atlantic catastrophe, "and we have always risen triumphant." Full point. So that is the end of our second magnolia intermezzo. Yeah? Do you see the magnolias? Okay. Thank you for your patience and attentions.